You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
All right, everybody, we're back, and we've got my good friend Casey Conway. Casey, what are you again? What's your credentials?
So I'm the director, the new director of research and corporate engagement at the University of Alabama's Culver House College, and there's the real estate center, the Acre Real Estate Center. So, which you don't know, Jim, is really the reason I went and was lured by Alabama there was how could you get a cooler name for a real estate center than Acre, the Alabama Center for Real Estate? I mean, how could you turn that down?
Well, you're absolutely right. I don't know. We'll have to measure that in meets and bounds at some other time. Now, we were talking about where the middle class was going to be able to make up the lost jobs that they were going to lose to technology. And you've seen the future. What does it look like?
So the future, I think, is somewhere in our community college network system. So recently I was down in Houston, and the Houston Community College System has pivoted away from all kinds of crazy stuff and focusing on where the workforce solutions are needed. They're needed in things like welding, HVAC, operating a 3D print machine, maintaining the robotic forklifts and warehouses. And so they have an intense program across all these different disciplines. And before they started this program, the average wage for these kids coming out of these community college programs was in the 40 to 50, 60,000 range. That is almost up 50 to 100%. They have companies tripping over their feet to get in there. And I think that's what we're missing. The challenge is going to be even to compete and to get into those community college programs. We've got to do better at getting our high school kids to graduate. We still have almost 30% of our high school students in this country that do not graduate, and they do not have a chance. And the jobs are not going to be there in the tourism and the retail industries. So we've got to do a better job of that secondary education, get these kids through college, and follow maybe somewhat of the European model and pull these kids out of a track that says everybody's got to be a lawyer or a doctor or have a master's degree in poetry or art history and tour Europe and have $100,000 in student loan debt, and instead get them on a track for a college community college program, because the wages today, a welder coming out of the Houston Community College system is making $70,000 to $90,000 a year
plus benefits.
Yeah,
sounds like that person could buy a house at 25.
Absolutely,
and now we've got the economy rolling again.
That's right.
Wow, we need more of that. Now, what's going on in Florida? What are you seeing in Florida? We're seeing all of the people talk about the death of retail. Publix went out and they retailed the whole place. We had all these big box retailers come in, and now you're starting to see what people perceive as a change in retail that drives a lot of real estate. What other changes are you seeing?
So the good news for Florida, less so here in South Florida, but more in the central and northern part of the state, is that the rebuild and rebound in Florida is not just a housing and tourism story. It is much deeper than that. The technology, what programs like the University of Central Florida are doing, they're the second most attended university behind Arizona State now, and they're focused on those kind of skill gap jobs that we're missing. The science and technology and the STEM programs that have come out of NASA that have gone into Orlando, and they've pivoted all those skill sets into drones or game technology or artificial intelligence and programming. So the story in Florida is much more diverse. On the retail side, look, people got to realize every 15 years, set your clock just like leap year in February every 4 years, every 15 years, we completely blow up and destroy retail. We started after World War II, we went to the suburban malls, and we went to lifestyle centers. So consumers aren't spending less today, they're spending it in a different way. And so they're not doing it in a physical location. The physical locations, they want more entertainment, more experience. The goods they're doing online, I mean, my wife even orders paper towels and toilet paper from online because she didn't want to have to go lug it from the grocery store and the free shipping and all. So we're redeveloping it. And for every square foot of retail that we lose today, we gain 2 square feet in logistics and e-commerce. And I think what's happening is we're having the turduncan experience of retail and industrial. We got to come up with a term that's going to combine retail and industrial into one property type, because that's really what's happening. The retailers are vertically integrating. They're owning their supply chain so they can deliver on the promise. You order in the morning, we have it there that night or the next morning. And they can't do that with a landlord or special servicer or the securitization model.
You know, what really amazed me was I was leaving my house Sunday at 2 o'clock, and Amazon had just delivered at my apartment building via the United States Postal Service.
Isn't that amazing?
Blew my mind.
And on Sunday, it blows my mind when I'm coming home from church on Sundays and I see the Postal Service trucks running around. I mean, they finally figured out how you have to compete. But the other thing is Amazon is deploying in 38 cities this new Amazon Key where you know, you'll have like a lockbox set up on, you know, on your front door.
Right.
And instead of leaving the package for someone to follow and steal, basically they'll have a code and they'll unlock the door, put the package inside, close it and relock it, and away we'll go. And they're piloting that in 38 cities. They're doing it in my home city of Atlanta right now.
Wow, that makes so much sense. That sounds like a really good idea. You know, people live in a building, they don't have to worry. I guess the people that man the front door at the building, though, they've been just going crazy. What are some other things you see? How about office space? Office space seems to be evolving, seem to be going on the decline. Now you read about people are coming back into the office.
They are. So I think, you know, this trend started, I remember I was at a conference where a few years ago, and it was around the Mantou Teo experience from Notre Dame, mm-hmm. you know, and he never met the girl, but they did a lot online.
Right.
And then he figured out maybe we should have met. Well, I think what we're finding that same experience in office is that maybe it's a good idea to everybody get together in the office space and see and touch, shake hands, and really see and test out the wares and the cash flows and all that type stuff. So office, what we're seeing is urban works, suburban still a struggle. They call it densification, which is mean companies are saying, I can step up and I can pay for all this technology in this new space because I'm going to put the same workforce in with 30% less space. So what it means is millennials don't have smaller IQs. They just have smaller cubicles. And so companies are saying, okay, if I've got to go to 30, 35, 40 bucks a square foot, if I get rid of 30% of the space and I combine it, then it works.
Same.
Well, 5 years ago, everybody said the model only works in certain buildings because there was a parking problem. There were all these surges of parking. Well, now Uber and driver's technology is solving that problem. So the real question we're going to have to ask is what's going to be worse than dark retail stores? Parking garages in their city. What do we do with parking garages? Because now think about it. I'm running 5 cars from home with, you know, millennial kids and my wife, sure. and everything else. So imagine I have a driverless car, right? And my daughter takes it to high school in the morning at 6:50 or 7, and then she sends it home. And then I take it to the airport, catch my flight, go where I'm going to go. I send it back home for my wife to have it during the day and running. Then she sends it back to high school to pick my daughter up after her marching band and all her school activities. And then when I land that night, they send it back to me at the airport. Now I've gone from 5 cars running on the road and hurting the infrastructure, impacting it, to one. That is a huge impact. That means huge transformation how we think about public transportation, parking, infrastructure. So there's solutions, there's opportunity in all this disruption. It doesn't need to be all bad.
Well, the architects that I'm talking to are now building flat parking floors with helix on the ends so that they can turn that into residential or commercial or storage down the road. It sounds to me like it's just more concentration. We've only got like a minute or two left. I always talk about how in these urban zones, you're going to see a vertical integration where they're all going to become city states. And I think that's going to be part of what we see too. What do you think about that?
Very much so. You know, the business model and the millennials are teaching us, you know, they're now the largest demographic. They're bigger than the baby boomers. And what they're teaching us is, you know, life in the city without commutes and having to maybe own all these assets and have a 2-car garage that's full of junk and maybe adopt more of an Uber lifestyle and enjoy life and have entertainment. They're teaching us baby boomers, we had it all wrong. We had a big house in the suburbs with a garage full that we couldn't fill anything in that we were paying debt on. And long commutes and have to go to Home Depot every weekend and fix the stuff. And this is all changing. We're seeing 30% of all new multifamily is being rented by really aging, retiring baby boomers that are not buying a second home. They're basically renting and putting the cash back to work. So, you know, one thing I'll always tell you, they've taught me at the university is that, you know, when you get near the end of anything, you have to leave the audience with a good idea and a bad idea. And so a good idea, I think, is your show, all the things that you bring to the table for us to learn and really turn things up. The really bad idea, I'll tell you the one thing not to invest in, and that is dog walking drones. So imagine dogs, they have a sensitivity to hearing, so they hear the high pitch of the drone, and so we start whacking at the drone. So what is the drone programmed to do when it looks like it's being assaulted? it goes home. It goes up 100 feet. So it hangs the dog, and then it's programmed to go directly back to its home location. So it drags the dog home hung and is waiting for you to come home. I think this has PETA and stuff written all over it. So there's a lot of good uses for technology. Dog walking drones, I think, is a bad one.
Well, Casey, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and giving us the good and bad of technology. It sounds to me like you think that there is a future for the American economy. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I'm more optimistic than I've been in a long, long time.